My next guest's life changed after placing his first bet on a World Cup game in 1998. That bet led to him gambling over 10 million euro and stealing 1.7 million to fund his addiction, going on the run and serving a prison sentence. He's now written a book called Tony 10, which was his username, and he's with us this morning. Tony, good morning to you.
Good morning, how are you?
Good morning. Fine, thank you. Well, my goodness, what a story. Let's go back to the first bet, 1998, Tony. What was the first bet?
The first bet was in the quarterfinal of the World Cup, Argentina versus Holland. I was working in a bar down in Carlow, and there was a customer at the counter, and he was going on to place a bet on the match. Well, my lunch break was coming up, so I decided to go down and have a look and maybe put on a bet as well. I was 24 at the time, I hadn't placed a bet before. So we went down and I fancied Patrick Kluivert to score first, and he was going to back Holland to win the game. So we just were looking around the bookmakers and we saw this special or this on the board, and it was Holland to win, and Kluivert score first was 45-1. So we decided to put a pound each on it. He had another couple of bets, so that was the only bet I had for the match. So I went back up to the bar and I was working away, and the match kicked off, and then Kluivert scored first and Argentina equalised, and then Bergkamp scored that wonder goal then to win it. So I won £46 at the time, which would have been about half a week's wages back then.
And that win, was you hooked?
That was me hooked. I remember going to bed that night and thinking how easy this was, and that initial buzz that you'd often hear gamblers or problem gamblers talking about, that initial kind of, yeah, I was hooked at that stage.
That then descended into a run of gambling, if we cut a very long story short, where you were putting on what size of stakes, Tony?
At the end of it, it would mean bets of 10,000, 20,000, 30,000, 5,000, and then over the counter would have been, my average bet would have been 1,500, 2,000 per go. So I think at the very end I was gambling per day up to 20 or 30,000 euro. That's what it extended. It took a few years to get to that, obviously. Like, you know, my gambling was still very much normal, inverted commas, as such, for a good few years. But I think when I went online in 2003, the betting started to go a little bit heavier. I suppose I would have exhausted all other means of gambling getting money for gambling before I started stealing money. But I had a lot of the bets kind of got bigger and bigger going along. But I suppose to answer your question, at the end, that's what it got up to, them kind of figures.
And online, were you betting on roulette or the slots, or was it all on single events?
The majority would have been accumulators, soccer, tennis, and probably short price horses. I used to probably have four or five different events in accumulators, trying to win the maximum amount of money. For me, it was always when it kind of got to that level, it was about trying to get the money back. I realised I'd done wrong, I'd stolen money, which was so far removed to who I believe I was as a person.
And we'll get to we'll get to that in a second or two. Let me understand first of all what it feels like. So what does it feel like when you lose 30 grand in a night?
You feel numb. It feels, I think when you get to the point that gambling becomes compulsive or problematic, there's just a feeling of numbness. There's a feeling of, there's actually no feeling at all, if that makes any kind of sense. It's like the fun has gone out at a very early stage. I remember I had 30,000 on a horse at 10-3, and the horse probably bolted in by 30 or 40 lengths, and I didn't even flinch looking at the race. I won 100,000 plus 30,000 stayed back. That's where it gets to. It's just kind of, you often hear with someone a problem with gambling, it's like you're nearly hoping that the horse or the dog or the football team lose so you can stop the madness of the gambling, that you've no way of gambling anymore. Because even when that won that time, you're thinking, oh, I have to go again. I have to try. You know, you're kind of...
Why, though? So if you win, explain to us why. If you win 100,000 euro, why have you not got the feeling, okay, I'm going to stop while I'm ahead?
I'm going to stop what, sorry?
Why have you not got the feeling I'm going to stop when I've had that big win? I know you weren't ahead totally, but why not think, okay, I'm not. I know if I keep going, the odds means I'm going to lose it. So why not bank that money? Why have you got to go again?
At that stage, I had taken a lot more money, so it was both right. I need to nearly double or triple this money to get the money back into the safe. There was only one point I can remember thinking or remembering that I was even up, and that was at a fairly early stage. I think it was 2006. I'd won a lot of money in the first round of matches in the World Cup. I remember talking to my friend and just told him that I didn't, of course, tell him the amounts I had on it, but I told him I had a nice bet up, and I remember thinking if I would have cleared all my own debts at that stage and had about €1,000 left. That was the only stage I can remember we never been up. But I think the Galway races were the following week, and I was, you know, I was having a problem with it. I couldn't just stop. I wanted more. Like, when is enough enough for a problem gambler? No, it's never enough. So I just wanted to keep going and keep going because I wanted more.
Where were you stealing the money from?
From the safe. I was the manager in the post office, so I had access to the safes. So it was literally just taking bundles of 50s over at the end. At the start, it was a little bit more methodical. I used to take bags of €2 coins and replacement bags of 10 cents and just take the money and then try to win it back. I think at the time, as I said, I had thousands of my own personal debts, and my wife had become pregnant, so I knew that I was going to have to take on the mortgage. So all my outgoings were as much as my incomings, wages-wise, and I started to feel the walls closing in me. So that's when I started taking the money. I didn't know what else to do. I justified my actions in that. I saw it as borrowing at the time, which I know looking back now is just madness. But at the time, I justified it in that I said if I can take a little bit of money, win it, I can put it back and then pay off some of these loans so my outgoings aren't as much. Looking back now, of course, as I say, it's madness, but at the time I justified it in my own head as the right thing to do.
Which shows how crazy you were in your own head. You know, borrowing money to gamble, you kind of know you're going to lose it. You know you're going to get caught.
Yeah. Exactly. I'd already borrowed up to 50,000 of loans from financial institutions at this stage to gamble, and that's what I was paying back. And then, as you were saying, you're borrowing money to gamble with. It's not even your own money. You're borrowing money and paying that back. And
I've spoken to some gamblers before who, when they were telling me their stories, they were saying that, look, they would, you know, they would easily spend whatever, thousands and thousands of pounds on a bet. But then when they were buying stuff for themselves, in other words, food or clothes, you know, they would feel guilty at spending a tenner. Was that type of stuff happening to you?
Yeah, you see it as your gambling money. I remember during my interview with the detectives in Gorey Garda Station, he said at one point you had enough to clear your mortgage here. He said, like, why didn't you clear your mortgage? And I said, because that's my gambling money, because you don't see it as normal money, if that kind of makes sense. I know even with all the money that I stole, I'm still paying back my own personal debts. I never took money and paid off my own debts with it. I'm still paying off these debts I didn't. So it's kind of, you separate it as such, which is, it's crazy to look at that way. But you would actually go hungry, or you'd drive the car on fumes, or if even, you know, in some cases I've heard that, you know, there's no weekly shop in a home for families and they still won't give up money to see this or gambling money. They could have £1,000 or €1 under pocket, but they won't put €50 to get food. But that kind of, it's hard to describe it. It's just, you just think it's your gambling money. You just think it's separate to everything else. And it's very common, and people with problems with gambling, you always hear that every time I'm doing work with people in counselling centres or at GA meetings, you'd often hear the same story that it's like separate to everything else that they have.
You ended up on the run. You actually ended up in Belfast. Do you remember that day?
I remember very well. I remember the audit team arrived that morning and I just drove out of Gorey. I ended up in Dublin and I just stayed going. And I ended up in Belfast. And from there, I went on towards Carrickfergus because I was trying to book into a room in Belfast, not knowing what I was going to do or what was happening. And they were looking for identification. So I had to, I just went to the next available small town, which was Carrickfergus, and I booked into a hotel up there. So that's, I just remember being, it was nearly like that adrenaline rush again, like the first bet. It was just like I knew I was going to be caught. I just drove, and it was just, I didn't know where I was going, what was happening. And I spent 3 or 4 days up there. And that's when things started to get very dark. I had suicidal thoughts. I kind of realised the enormity of what was after happening. I was kind of thinking people would be better off without me. But thankfully, my family found me in Carrickfergus on 2nd of July 2011.
You ended up...
My last hour was that day.
You ended up... Sorry to interrupt, Tony. You ended up in a betting shop and you were caught on CCTV. That's how you were caught.
That's right. I was in Carrickfergus and I was still gambling online, thinking that I could win all this money back, even though I knew that I would have been discovered at this stage. And I lost all my money online, but I still had a docket with €10,000 on it. So I drove back into Belfast, and I asked the person behind the counter to just cash it into my online account so I could continue gambling at night. It's mad to drive into a betting shop at 9 o'clock at night just to kind of be able to stay gambling throughout the night. That's kind of how mad it got with me. And a couple of events happened, so I ended up not cashing the docket. When I left the betting office, they would have had to ring the bookie office in the south that I'd done the bet in. So then I knew that as soon as they'd done that, they would know that. I didn't realise I was down as a missing person. But as soon as they done that, I was discovered on CCTV leaving the office.
You gambled over €10 million, correct?
Yeah. The total stake was €10.5 million.
How much did you lose in the end? That's total stake. How much did you lose?
That's total loss. So there would have been a total loss of €10.5 million. Total wins was something just over 9 million. So I won just over 9 million, lost 10.5 million, and then the rest, that was online, and then the rest would have been lost over the counter.
Do you think the bookmakers who were taking the bets bear any responsibility, or you're a grown up, you're an adult, and so therefore you should be responsible for your own actions? Which do you think?
Definitely, but on my part, I took full responsibility. I am a grown up and adult. I take full responsibility for what I've done. I went to prison for what I've done, and deservedly so. But I think when you're in that cycle of addiction, cycle of problematic gambling, you don't see that. So maybe it should be probably along with that. Like, personal responsibility goes out the window, and that's when you're in that cycle of gambling. And I know now, looking back, I had a problem, but back even then, I didn't see it as a problem. So yes, I believe there should be more regulations, policies, procedures in place to protect people who probably can't see that at the time. Because when you're in addiction, whether it be alcohol, drugs, gambling, any kind of addiction, you don't see it as a problem. You can't get out of the cycle. You justify every action. You justify everything that you're doing. It's only when you take a break or get a break from it and take a step back from it, looking back in, you see it as, yeah, this is a huge problem. But while you're in the middle of it, you don't see it as that. I suppose that was a question posed to me a couple of weeks ago, that about personal responsibility. And I think within that, there is personal responsibility, but you have to get to a point where you can see that. And I think people listening might think, well, why couldn't you just stop? And I think that's relating it back to their own experience of gambling. Same as people see someone with an alcohol problem and say, why can't they stop? Because they're relating it back to their experience of what gambling is to them or drinking is to them. So I suppose within that, when the vulnerable person can't see that or take responsibility in that moment, there should be kind of policies, procedures in place to kind of protect them.
Are you out of it now? Is the lust to gamble gone, or do you still feel it?
Yeah, thoughts come back in every so often, especially in times of vulnerability or times when my life balance mightn't be as it can be. My last bet was nearly seven years ago, and I work very hard each day to make sure that gambling is not a part of my life. I've done a lot of personal development work, even in my training as a counsellor. I have a great awareness of when old behaviours are coming back in. So it's something that constantly.
It's hard to avoid, though, Tony, isn't it? You look at any football match. If you're watching a football game these days, you can't avoid betting sponsorship on the shirts of the players. If you're watching television at night time, you can't avoid the ads. It's impossible to avoid the ads. It's everywhere. The lure to gamble is everywhere.
Exactly. It's all around us, and you can't avoid it being flashing up in your face on telly or on social media, on your smartphone. It's all around us. I suppose I just work very hard on making sure it's not a part of my life. It is all around us, but my life, I suppose, at the moment, I'm working in the area, so I'm very aware of all that. I have great support in that. Like, for me, gambling was a coping mechanism for deeper line issues. That's what my understanding of why I gambled. So I work a lot on myself in that sense, in that I have new coping mechanisms when things are not going well. I have great supports around me, so that when I'm not in such a good place, when life throws stuff at us, I have other supports, I have other ways of reaching out for help, that I don't turn back to using gambling for escapism.
Tony, thank you very much indeed for talking to me today. Your book is called Tony 10. That was your username. It's published by Guild Books. And thank you very much. There's a BBC Action Line if you think you need help because of what you've heard this morning. bbc.co.uk/actionline, or you can contact the National Gambling Helpline 0808 8020 133. 0808 8020 133. Tony, thank you.